Alright, so I feel like I'm taking crazy pills today. This is episode 3 of Delicate Wrinkles. This is my 6th attempt at recording episode 3. Issues with volume, feedback, whole slew of crap. But this will be the last attempt, I pray and hope. None were as bad as attempt number 3, because like the first two, that lasted about a minute. I was going to attempt to, you know, start the episode with a quote. It didn't work out too well. Episode 3, I got an hour and 20 minutes recorded. Oh yeah, hour and 20 minutes. Had it done on Thursday. If you notice, I'm a little bit late. But yeah, had it finished Thursday, ready to publish. All I need to do was add the music my friend Damien had created. If you noticed, last week had intro music and outro music, and my friend Damien Ledbetter came up with that. It's awesome. So I'm about to add the music, and I listen to what I had recorded, find the best spot to put the music. And I hear the worst feedback I have ever heard on a recording I've done. Actually, on any recording, whether I did it or someone else. I mean, it was awful. Just this high background, just throughout the whole episode, all 1 hour and 20 minutes. You know, my vocals sounded normal, but the background, I was upset, to say the least. I mean, it's an hour and 20 minutes. But then I started thinking, I must have fried my audio card, you know, the sound card, and my laptop's gone. Something happened to it. Or my headphones broke, my headset, you know, something's wrong with the mic, it's screwed up, dang it, you know. I'm thinking of all these things, and I'm like, now I gotta replace either my laptop or my headphones. Well, before I do that, I better test it, you know, see which one's the problem, where the culprit lies. Well, I plug it all up, open up a new file. I'm like, all right, let's see. I hit record, and then I look at my settings, and I notice that it's set on the microphone for the laptop and not for the headset I have plugged into my laptop. And then I realized my error. Even though I had my headset on and I was talking into the mic, it was actually the laptop microphone, which, you know, the built-in mics pretty much suck. I mean, you get all that background noise. I mean, it's just not high quality. But that's how I had recorded the episode, while I'm wearing the headset. And, you know, so there's this terrible feedback through the whole episode. I'm like, well, all right. At least I know the problem's not with my headphones or headset. It's not with the laptop. I can either re-record it, do the whole episode again. I really don't want to. It's an hour and 20 minutes. Or I could see if I can fix it. You know, people do stuff like that all the time. I mean, they take people who aren't that good at singing live and do some great music magic, audio magic to fix the vocals of a CD, you know, and all these free programs now, you know, they're getting really good. You know, the average person can create albums and it sound good from their own home computer. So I'm like, surely I can, this has some setting to remove this bad background feedback. So I ran it through the noise reduction filter 3 times, and while the background static feedback of which was throughout the whole episode, while that was gone, all of a sudden there was this high pitch like throughout the whole episode. So it's like, I can't publish this. I can't post this. Like, no one would want to finish the episode. It's too, like, mind-numbing. It's going to drive you insane. So I had to scrap it. You know, four and five episode, or attempts four and five were me here in this room right now, just like 10 minutes ago, attempting to record, seeing that I had the volume of the mic at the bottom, or at the far left of the spectrum, like, oh, I don't have it set loud enough. I stop, turn it all the way up, and I'm like, wait, let me test this. I don't want to go an hour and 20 minutes in again and everything be off. So I played it, and actually where the volume was fine. It sounded good. There's no disruption, no bad feedback. Well, when I had set it all the way up high, you could hear this slight, like, you know, static, the mic trying to pick up outside sound. So, I'm back doing it, have it set up normal. Hopefully the audio quality on this is, you know, good and not filled with feedback or static. I keep double checking my settings so that the microphone is set to just my headset. The speakers are just set to my headset, so everything is how it should be, the volume levels. My OCD is going to cause me to pause every once in a while to check it. I am doing my best to keep my OCD in check, especially with things like this, but, you know, it happens. It's going to happen, you know. While pills are good, they are not the ultimate cure for our problems. But on to episode 3. Episode 3 is set to be a progress report of sorts. Something I mentioned in episode 2. I'd like to have kind of like these in-between episodes. I don't know if it'll be in between every major episode where I go over disorder of mine or have a guest, but that's kind of the plan. So today is going to be kind of a progress report, and just kind of talk about how the week's been, how medication's been, therapy, meditation activities that I'm learning about in this book I'm reading. So that's what we're going to get into today, and just kind of jump right in. Earlier in the week, on Monday, I had an appointment with behavioral health nurse practitioner in Tahlequah, you know, with the Cherokee Nation, and is to discuss my Zoloft. I was taking 75 milligrams, and I had been advised by a previous therapist, the therapist I would see at work, and sorry for the slight pause / interruption. I thought I heard my cat, and it's actually my chair squeaking. My bad. I'll stay on track. Previous therapist, right. Previous therapist that I was seeing through work when I worked at Oklahoma DHS had suggested that with OCD that I'd be at about 100, 125 milligrams of Zoloft. I'm like, okay. I guess, you know more than I do. And I mentioned this to the nurse practitioner, and she seemed a bit peeved that this previous therapist of mine made that suggestion. She even said, you know, that the therapist should never have done that. That's not her job, you know, because psychiatrists can prescribe medicine and know more about medicine. Therapists are more to cognitive approach, you know, helping you with methods, with coping mechanisms, and, you know, positive thinking, things of that nature, and help you get it out to discuss with you. But, yeah, this nurse practitioner seemed pretty upset, and so here I'm thinking, all right, she's knocking up the dosage, she's going to be like, 75 milligrams is fine with you. And at the time, I'm thinking, well, that's okay, you know, I feel like I'm doing pretty well. There's times when intrusive thoughts still come, or, you know, my compulsion to check things or obsess over something, it's just nowhere near severe as it had been. So I'm thinking, well, 75 is fine, it's fine. If she thinks I should stay on it, I should stay on it. But she asked me to go into, you know, my OCD, how long I've had it, examples from my childhood, things of that nature. I tell her. She's like, okay, we're going to up your dosage today to 100. You know, she's like, how many pills do you have left? I took them with me, I showed her. She's like, yeah, we're definitely going to up it. You take from that. She's like, I'll write a script for your refill to occur here pretty soon, and it'll, you know, it'll be 100 milligram tablets, and after 3 weeks, you're going to go to 150 milligrams. And I was like, okay, I wasn't expecting that at all. So I'm like, great, my OCD is worse than I thought. You know, it's, for me, it's always been like, nah, I mean, there might be a little something wrong with my mind, but it's nowhere near extreme like some of these other people. But every time after I talk to a therapist, they're like, oh, no, you've got severe issues. And it's like, huh, I don't know how to take that. But so my dosage has been upped. So far, it's working fine. I feel pretty relaxed. I'm obsessing here now and then. But of course, when you up your dosage with Zoloft, it takes a little bit to adjust to it. Had some slight headaches. That could also be because, you know, the weather keeps going from warm to cold, and people's allergies are really screwing with them. So, but the nurse said I might have to add Paxil if I still have intrusive thoughts, obsessive thoughts, can't deal with it. Paxil is like some antipsychotic that goes well with Zoloft, helps people with OCD. So we'll see. I'm hoping I don't, because the less medication I have to take, the better. However, one of the reasons I'm in the position I'm in and got so depressed was because, as I've said before, the Gilmartin way is to refrain from getting help. You know, we don't have a problem, or, you know, nothing we can't fix on our own. Well, it's like, eh. So, but that's it with the medication. It's interesting, these meds, the Zoloft, it's pretty good. You know, I remember when I worked at DHS, I had some clients who said they would be on it for like a week and then got off it because they said it didn't do anything. But, you know, the doctors say, you know, you probably won't feel a difference for 2 to 3 weeks. It takes time. Actually, I think maybe 4 to 6 weeks, you know. I have a very high absorbency rate, so I felt mine after about 2 weeks, could really start feeling the difference. But you have to give it a chance, you know, with medications that deal with the structure of your brain and help you, like, help the chemicals react differently. You have to give it a chance, and you have to consciously work with it, you know, make conscious choices. And I feel like the medicine's really good at helping you make better conscious decisions with your own thoughts, how you think about yourself, how you guilt or don't guilt yourself, how you obsess or don't obsess over things. And, you know, that's why I'm glad I'm on it. I feel like I'm able to, like, hit a pause button on my mind. And the past week or two's been a lot like that, because, as I mentioned in previous podcasts, I've been playing Magic the Gathering online a lot, especially the past 2 weeks, just nonstop every day, which is crazy, because before 2 weeks ago, I'd go months without playing it. You know, had no compulsion for it, but it's like, a new set came out, and I was real excited about the new set of cards that came out with Magic the Gathering, and that could be a reason, and I just got really into it, just kept playing, and, but I noticed, like, before I got on medication, before I started seeing a therapist, I would have guilted myself so bad, like, right now, I would not be able to do the podcast because I'd still be crippled with guilt. And just, not be able to think, not be able to spend time with my wife and children or my friends, not be able to, like, do research for the novel I'm writing, not be able to think of stories, not be able to write, not be able to even pray or read. I would just be nonstop guilting myself. And then to get my mind to relax from that guilt, what would I do? I'd either sit in front of the TV and zone out, because then my brain would stop, or I would play the game some more in some defiance to redeem the guilt I was feeling. Like, be like, okay, I feel guilty, I'll play and I'll win and it'll be worth it. And it's like, no, that's dumb. But the thing is, I would have been just guilting myself hardcore. Tell myself I'm a terrible person, that I'm never going to change, that I'm always going to waste time or money, the biggest being time. You know, I'm not working on my novel, I'm not practicing the bass, not working on ministry ideas. Like, I mean, I'd be nonstop criticizing myself, cripple myself, and end up doing nothing. But being on the meds and the therapy, it's like, you know, the whole purpose for guilt is to get you to realize you've done something wrong or you're doing something wrong. And then you move from that guilt to, like, a turning away from it, repentance, so to say, where you're like, okay, I feel guilty. Why? Here's why. Okay, then I'm going to stop doing that. And I know I'm able to stop doing that. And here's why I'm going to stop doing it. And then you move on and you feel good. Well, with me, the guilt would just stay. It's like I believed I had to continually feel bad about that for an undetermined amount of time. Which is sad. It makes it very difficult to move forward in life. It makes it difficult to get much accomplished. But it's what I would do. I don't do that anymore. Thank God. Like, and I feel like I'm able to move on from that thing I feel guilty about, because I'm not constantly guilting myself. Because it seems like when you constantly guilt yourself about something, it's hard to stop doing that thing you feel guilty about. I'm not sure why that is, but for me, that's always been the case, because then I go to levels of extremes where it's like, all right, I'm going to stop doing that thing forever. So then what I do, I binge. Okay, if I'm going to stop doing this forever, let me have one last night of doing it. And then I binge, and then that, of course, the mind's used to that. It makes it difficult to quit, and trying to learn how to do things in moderation. However, when it comes to digital media, I've never been good at self-discipline when moderation on it. But being in therapy, being on the meds, I'm starting to learn how to, and it's awesome. So it's good, like, because, you know, this week I had been wanting to lessen how much I played the game, and I feel like I was successful for a bit. Like, I'd go, like, 30 minutes one day, 30 minutes one day, but then, like, was it, like, Monday or Tuesday, something, I was, like, playing a lot during the day. And my wife called me on it, you know. I was out grilling, and I'd taken the laptop out there with me. Like, you know, I was like, come on, man, take a break. You're grilling food, enjoy the weather outside, you know, play with your kids while the food's grilling. But my wife came out, she took the laptop, and at first I was mad, but I was like, you know what? The fact that I'm mad should indicate something. So I was like, oh, thanks for doing that. You know, I was like, I don't want to be the extreme personality I am, where I'm like, all right, I'm never playing the game again. Because my wife would always be like, you know, you got to stop saying things like that, because then you just binge, you know, learn how to do things in moderation. So it's like, you know, if I play the game, I'm going to play it, you know, after I've spent time with you and the kids. I'll do it in the evenings, you know, because I want to use my days for working on the podcast, working on the blog, working on my novels, things like that. working on my therapy. So it's going well. And then, like, Thursday night, I felt really good because I'd recorded the podcast, and I thought, yeah, it's awesome. It's going to work well. And then, so I played the game. I played till 3 in the morning. I played from 9 p.m. to 3:30 in the morning. So yesterday, I was exhausted. It was like, you know, there was no, like... And it was funny, it's like the first time I played like the first match or tournament I played in, it's like from 9 to like 11. And it was very fulfilling. I got like second place, so I won some packs and stuff, and I should have stopped there. But I traded in the packs, got more tickets, kept playing games, so kept playing. Like, it's this compulsion where, like, well, I keep winning, so I should keep playing. Which is funny, that's how, like, I developed a gambling problem 7 years ago. It's how every addiction I ever develop, how it occurred, how it comes about. I enjoy it, but then, like, I obsess over it and have to keep doing it. And so, starting to learn how to, like, break away from that. We're like, okay, that was fun, let's be done with it for today. So that's my goal. So because the reason why is I know some people who game way more than I have been, you know, like, I'll say, like, man, you know, to me, a long period of gaming is over an hour. Like, if I'm gaming from 2 to 4 hours, I wasted so much time. I mean, but that's my personality because, you know, and with me, there's other things I want to do. I have 2 children, I have a wife, I like spending time with them, and I like to write. I love writing stories. I love doing artistic creations, you know, artistic endeavors, the podcast, book covers, books, so many different things, posters, whatever. But when I spend that much time gaming, because, you know, I've limited time, only so many hours in a day, I neglect those things I truly want to do. And when I do that, I notice depression increases, my OCD increases, then anxiety starts to come out, and I even notice my attention span lessens. So even though I'm on medication for ADD, it seems like when I'm not doing, like, real work, like my passion in life, and neglecting certain duties because I'm spending hours on digital media or watching movies, my mental disorders in a way kind of like flare up. And I'm glad I figured that out about myself, because now I can make a game plan, kind of make a schedule for myself and prevent it from happening. Like, through therapy and stuff, I'm learning all about like preventive measures, because with our mental disorders, it's very important to create like preventive measures. I know in the book I'm reading, this chapter is a lot about meditation, like meditating and prayer in the morning to get your mind in this place to where it can respond well to outside stimuli. And it's working. It's working really well, I've noticed. And it's training our brain, you know, practicing it, doing it at the same time every day, to get our mind in this place where when outside stimuli come, we're able to, like, close our eyes, take in deep breaths, and break down these feelings, these thoughts. Because, like, for me, with the guilt, that'll just appear, and I have to stop, take in deep breaths, and break it down. Like, why do I feel guilty? Is this a real feeling? You know, should it still be here? And, you know, when I do that, I see the guilt going away. And then I start to feel good, and I move on with my day and get some things accomplished. And then I feel great. So That's a big reason why I'm trying to steer clear of too much gaming. Because I want a healthy mind. So what I did this week, I was like, all right, I need to put it into practice. If I'm going to stop gaming, that means I need to be doing something. Because one of the reasons I game, not just because I like it, is because, you know, if I'm feeling bored, like, oh, there's nothing to do, I don't want to just sit here, you know, because if my mind is not active, it just goes all over the place. And then I start obsessing over things, find a reason to guilt myself because my mind's got to do something. So I went to the library, got some books, because I was like, you know what, I need to research some military things. You know, I've got this character for a novel I'm doing. He's a military guy, Army or Marines. And I realized I don't know a whole lot about the military, about active soldiers who are in other countries, or soldiers on active duty, you know, in other countries in time of war, time not of war. So I checked out 8 books. I know it's 8 books because I counted it multiple times. When I first did the recording, I had the stack next to me, and I counted, and I was like, there's 7 there, but I know there's a book missing. You know, like, because my visualization, I can remember a lot of what I see. And it's like, there's a book missing. I can't remember because I what the title was, but I know there was an 8th book because it was a book I wasn't going to read, because when I read the insert and stuff, I realized, oh, crap, I didn't need to get this book. This isn't going to help. And then I saw it was behind my laptop, the laptop I was using at that moment. So, you know, but I've always got to know where something is at that moment, or I start to obsess and freak out. But I got these books, and at least half of them I think will be helpful. I always get more than I need out of fear that I won't get enough. It's another issue I'm dealing with. You know, these 4 books were sufficient. However, I got 8 because of the worry, what if they weren't sufficient? And those 4 extra ones I got are actually useless. I won't need them. It's not really what I'm looking for. But I got them because I'm like, you know, I can't really progress in the story I'm writing because I need to know more about military life, about a soldier, different types of soldiers, ranks, all that stuff, you know. And I like learning new things about this, especially for storytelling, because I like to have accuracy, realism. I think it really brings a story to life. I started reading on it, and there's some very interesting stuff. Like, I'm only like 10 pages in one of the books, 12 pages into another, and there's so much I've learned already. I'm like, dang, I really did not know anything about this subject. But it's cool. I've learned a whole lot. I've added some wrinkles to my brain. That reminds me of this thing I accidentally said to a student once. I think I said, like, your brain must be as smooth as a bowling ball or something. After telling the kids, you know, you get when you learn something new, you get a wrinkle on your brain. Oh, man. Sometimes some of the jokes I said to my students, I don't think the parents would have appreciated it, but I did get those kids to do good work. I'm trying to do things, keep myself active, keep myself working on something, because I like to do it. I notice I'm happier. People around me notice I'm happier, not just happy, but joyful. And, you know, like, when you feel like you're accomplishing something, you feel good about yourself, especially when it's something you feel like you're good at and you like doing. So that's what I'm going to work on, especially this week coming up, because it's my last week of, I guess you could say, complete freedom. Because on Monday, November 2nd, I start my new job at the Veterans Affairs call center, where I'll be taking calls with people upset as to why their education benefits have not come in, or why they haven't received their benefit money. But you know what? It's cool. Like, I feel good. Last time I found out I was getting a new job back in February, before I started at DHS, like a week before, I was having not panic attacks yet, but I was having high anxiety, feeling depressed because, you know, I didn't want a new job. All I want to do is my writing career. But now I'm like, you know, it takes time. That's fine. I don't want to go in every time I write with the mindset that this has got to be it. I got to make a certain amount of money because that really takes away from the process. And then I start getting into depression, anxiety, obsess over writing itself instead of like focusing on the story. Like I obsess like, oh, did I write enough today? Is what I wrote good enough? And you know, when you think like that, you can't make good art. You can't do anything well when you're worried about if it's good enough. So I've decided, you know, I'm not going to do that anymore. The medication and the therapy helped me with that, because before it was like, I knew that that's how I should think. You know, I should be like, well, I shouldn't care. But any of you with a mental disorder understands that even though it's something you know you should or shouldn't do, it's a lot more difficult to put that into practice, to get the rest of your mind to accept that. Because I know for me, it seemed like my mind was split in two. There was my conscious mind, which was trying to figure everything out. And then there was another part, it wasn't so much subconscious, but it was like another entity that's like, hey, you know, we're sharing this. Here's how I feel about it. And that part of my brain seemed to always get the upper hand or have the final say. But not anymore, at least currently. So making some progress with being more productive. Next thing. I remembered there was a couple things I forgot to mention in the last episode. That's another reason for the in-between episodes. I feel like I am the king of remembering things after the fact. I was that kid who all the time, after getting in an argument with somebody, especially an argument or a debate, hours later I'd be like, that's what I should have said, or oh my gosh, why didn't I say that? And it's because I had this problem of always replaying out every conversation or event in my life, like especially, well, whether it went good or not, whether there's an argument or not, like I replay things out all the time. I'm like, well, what if I had done it this way, or I should have responded this way, and it plays out like a movie over and over and over. So there's going to be plenty of times I do an episode, and after I record it, upload it, and everything, I'm going to be like, oh, I forgot to discuss this. This would have been good. So that's what this time of the podcast is for. If you remember last week, I discussed OCD. Well, I forgot, and I would discuss things how, like, I would lay in bed at night, think a terrorist were going to come in the house, or that someone was going to blow up the restaurant I was at, and just obsess over it and start freaking out and be like, we got to get out of here. Well, I also forgot to mention that I would also obsess over being poisoned. Yes, poisoned. Now, I don't want you to think I thought myself so important that people wanted to just poison me individually. Like, oh, there's James Gilmartin, we've got to poison him. No, mine was always like my just bad damn luck. You know, like someone was wanting to just poison an entire state of people. So they broke into the Pepsi plant, or broke into Frito-Lay and like salted the chips with poison, so, you know, like rat poison or something, or they filled the Pepsi vats with strychnine. Like, I would think about this, like, man, someone could do that, you know, or maybe it's a disgruntled worker, or, you know, maybe it's a secret terrorist and this is their plot. And I would, I'd think about it while I was drinking, like, a Pepsi or something. And then I would stop and look at it, and it'd be like a full can. And I wouldn't be able to drink it. I would just set it down. And then if I would go for, like, to get maybe a glass of water instead, I would stop and be like, what if they poison the reservoir, like, or wherever we get our city water? And I would just lose it. And wouldn't eat, wouldn't drink. And because this was what I thought. And I remember I was 8 or 9. Something happened. Like, I guess we would export or import get grapes from Chile, and sometime in the 80s, like something was wrong with a shipment of the grapes from Chile, like E. coli, I don't know, poison, something. People died. I remember that. And I guess my mind automatically assumed it was because they were poison. Like, I really thought like someone injected each grape with poison. But you know, like being an adult now, I realize, okay, wait. You know, people leave the workers out, that you know they're not allowed to go to the bathroom, wash their hands, so they'll like pee and poop out there, and you know, like hepatitis, E. coli, stuff like that gets on the food, the vegetables or whatnot. And you know, I see all these Nipper alerts. It's like, oh, you know, recall on all these different food items. So I'm like, okay, that, looking back, I'm like, that's probably what happened. But as a kid, I was like, oh my gosh, someone wanted to kill a whole bunch of people for no good reason. So they went out into the fields one night and just poisoned all these grapes. Or they took the vatted grapes and lowered in the, and let them soak in this vat of poison and then shipped them out. It's like, now they're laughing at everybody. And so that, for a long time, you know, if it popped into my head that something might be poison, like it sucks, you know. I'd have like a piece of chicken or something, and like, what if this had been poison? I remember I did not eat Kentucky Fried Chicken until I was like 27 years old, I think, 27, 28, because when I was 7, my cousin Kelly mentioned. And he always would do this, and I don't think he was malicious about it, but he would always tell me stuff that wasn't true. Like, just, I remember he said, he was like, yeah, man, someone found maggots in their chicken, a Kentucky Fried Chicken. There was all these maggots in it, and I lost it. Like, I could not stop thinking about it. So I didn't eat there. I never ate there. And I couldn't understand why people still ate there. Because they're eating maggot-filled chicken, it was gonna kill them. Well, you know, looking back, I'm like, you know, if people had found that in their food, the place would have been shut down. Like, you know, if people would have reported that, they would have been shut down. Like, the business would have closed. No one would ever go there. But there were always people there, so. After like 20 years, I finally accepted that and said, all right, I'll try Kentucky Fried Chicken. And I enjoyed it. It's still hard for me to eat there because that will pop up in my head. But I have to like, not physically force myself, but it takes a lot of mental effort for me to go to Kentucky Fried Chicken because of what was said to me when I was 7 years old. Yeah, so. And I've never eaten at church's chicken. Because someone told me they put rocks in their chicken. So I still have never eaten there. And I've had people tell me it's good. Like, and they're like, man, you've never eaten church's chicken. I'm like, no, man, there's rocks in it. And it's like, no, there's not. If there's rocks in it, people wouldn't go eat there. And it's just. I need to just make myself do it to get over that compulsion, you know, to get over that weird obsessive fear. I need to just make myself go there. But then, of course, you know, and then I'll have to make myself not think about getting sick after eating it because I will think about it. I'll, for most of throughout the day, I'll be tempted to just be like, what's that weird feeling in my stomach, you know? Or do I feel lightheaded? Oh, my vision's getting blurry. There's some in that food. But it'll take mental effort, but you know, being in therapy, taking meds, working on this dialectical behavior book, I'll be able to achieve these goals. Well, I don't want to say it's a goal to eat a church's chicken, but I'll be able to, you know, complete this feat and you know, help get past my OCD. Another thing I forgot to mention was that sometimes, you know, besides thinking about terrorists coming and shooting up my entire family and having to create an escape plan when I'd be lying in bed waiting to go to sleep, sometimes lying in bed, not thinking of therapists, I'd be thinking my heart stopped. I was very restless. It always take me like 30 minutes to an hour or more to fall asleep. It's probably like a no-duh, James, now after listening to the last episode. But, you know, I didn't know why it took me so long. I just thought, you know, I was one of those people that takes a while to fall asleep. Well, I would lie in bed if I shifted. Like, sometimes I'd just lay still and listen to my heartbeat. And then I'd move a little bit. Because I was moving, I wasn't in tune focused like on my heart. So I wouldn't hear it or feel it. And so then I'd freeze. I'm like, oh my gosh, my heart stopped. And this was common. There was a period from like age 13 to 17 where I did this about every night. It was a common occurrence. Sometimes I'd get up, do jumping jacks just to feel my heart beating. Do push-ups, crunches, something. I get up and like pace, thinking my heart was just going to stop and I was going to drop dead. And I'd have to get up and just get active to feel it. So I knew I wasn't dying. Saying that, I'm like, man, that sounds really screwed up, man. I feel bad for this kid, but it was me, so I'm like, I just thought it was normal. You know, that's what's weird. I've been told that, like, you know, crazy people don't know they're crazy. And that's a good thing. But looking back, I'm like, man, I'm guessing that wasn't normal. Like, I've had this grand epiphany all of a sudden. But some of you may have had it too, you know. That's one of the good things about therapy and medication is looking back, you can realize now why you had all these behaviors. And some people be like, well, isn't that kind of a bad thing? Well, for me, it's a great thing, because if you don't have a mental disorder but you know someone who does, or, you know, at least for me, realizing that OCD or ADD was a cause for why I thought the way I thought is a huge relief on me. Because if it wasn't for those things, then man, I'm a screwed up individual. Now, we all have our screw-ups, but being able to look back at that, I'm like, okay, now things make sense. Now I feel like I can really get better. I can achieve goals. I can have accomplishments now, because now I fully understand why my brain does what it does. Now I can move on. Now I can figure out what I need to take control of, what I need to abstain from, what I need to do to get away from the obsessiveness. So it's good. I don't lay in bed thinking my heart's going to stop anymore. It's been at least a year now, I'm not going to lie. It's been at least 4 months since I've laid in bed, unable to fall asleep, thinking terrorists were going to come into my house and shoot me up. I may have misled you last week in implying that I haven't had these thoughts since I was a teenager. No, I still lie in bed. Well, not since being on medication. But in the past few months, I have laid in bed unable to sleep. Because I thought, you know, terrorists were going to come in, or that my heart was going to stop, or that a bullet was going to fly through the window and hit me. Those still happen, so I don't want to lead you to think that that was all when I was a young kid. No, that's never gone away. It just takes a break as I obsess over something else. So I mentioned the dialectical skills that I've been working on. I'm still in chapter 2. Chapter 2, I feel like, is a chapter that I need to take slowly. Typically when I read stuff, I just read through it. Especially when it's something I'm interested in and I'm learning a lot, I'll just keep reading and I'll highlight and I'll be like, I can just look at the highlights later. With this, I'm really having to go slow. take notes and really just put into practice what it suggests, because this one, it's a lot about breathing, meditating, thinking positively, you know, telling yourself positive things, thinking on positive things, and it's great. Next week, I may get it out and kind of go over some of the questions it asks or some of the lists it tells me to make up, mental exercises to do. So that you on the other end can have some sort of concept of what I'm talking about. You're not like trying to imagine and unable to. I don't want to leave you with ambiguity. I've decided I'm going to start journaling again. It's a good way to ensure I'm writing every day, just kind of like a daily inventory journal, just with how my thoughts are, how I'm doing with addictions. Kind of want to use it for the Celebrate Recovery group I'm in. I'm in another one. This time I'm co-facilitating, which is very good. One of the reasons for my depression, I realize, is I was feeling a lot of solitude, feeling alone, feeling disconnected from people. And being a Christian is funny, because one of the cool things about Christianity, one of the reasons it exploded back in the day, was the community, people helping each other, people being there for each other, just tight-knit group of people that you really wouldn't see in other places. But here, there's so much individuality. We're just like, oh, our problems are our own. I'll pray for you. You know, that's asking a lot for me to actually physically help you or financially help you. But I can pray for you from a distance. And I just feel like, you know, like I want to develop closer friendships where, like, you're not, no one, your friends and loved ones, they're never a burden. No matter how much they're going through, they're never a burden. You're never a burden on them. And you feel like you're helping each other and everybody's healthy, you know, emotionally, mentally, physically healthy because of that. So I've been missing that. So I'm glad to be in this group because, man, it's cool. Like, I can't mention any names, you know. There's the anonymity clause that's in CR, which is great, you know, what's said in the group stays in the group, but it's such a relief being around other guys who are as crazy or crazier than me, like, have mental disorders like me or have worse than me, but, I mean, these are dudes who have experienced extreme depression, still are, bipolar, OCD, addiction, you know, and it's awesome because we can all help each other. We've been through it. Like, there's this bond we have. And plus, you know, when you have a mental disorder, it's great to see that you're not alone, that other people experience and go through it too, because you can talk to each other and give each other tips and help each other out. And you know how to ask for things that people without the mental disorders don't. You know how to ask a question to them. You know how to, like, ask them how they're doing or how to give them advice that non or people without disorders don't know how. Yeah, co-facilitating this group's been so good. Like, we've only had 2 weeks, but it's been awesome, you know. And for Celebrate Recovery, been also, like, playing in the band, and that's been so much fun. Like, this past Thursday we played, and it was good. I loved it, man, just getting to play the bass, do a little slap on the bass. I don't slap on the bass. I'm not that good. I mean, I can keep rhythm. I can sing while I play. But I don't have a mic put up to me because I'm not the best singer. This isn't, like, negative self-talk. I'm not a good singer, and I'm fine with that. I like playing the bass, and I'm decent at the bass. You know, as I mentioned earlier, I have these goals. I'm going to, you know, instead of playing games or watching TV so much, I want to have these mental exercises where I do positive things, you know, work on writing. One of the things I want to work on is my bass playing. I want to get a bit better at the bass, because there's things about it I'd like to learn and add to it in the Celebrate Recovery band. I think it'd be fun. And so, I love it. And I think just being in any activity, especially if you have mental disorders, a great thing to do because we're able to find healing when we're around other people. I remember all the time in the news and stuff when someone, like nearly every time, when there was a mass shooting that would happen at a school or a movie theater, the shooter every time had like a mental disorder. And also what they were like in solitude, they weren't around people. They weren't with a tight-knit group of friends. And it's like, oh, they should have been seeing a therapist, or they used to see the therapist. They got off their meds. It's like, oh my gosh, and if they had a tight group of people, the people would have been like, hey man, are you still seeing Dr. So and so? Are you taking your meds? Like, we're worried about you. You need to take them. So, finding a good group, support group, is very important for mental health. Very important. I can't stress it enough. apologize. I'm getting a bit of a cough. My daughter woke up sick this morning, coughed so much she made herself throw up, and I am not worried. I might be getting it, but I don't want to be a hypochondriac about it. But yeah, I'm nearly finished with this episode. It's going well. It's not going to be near the hour and 20 minutes the last one was, but I feel like this one has been more cohesive and together. If you're like, really? He finds this one more cohesive and together? Well, how bad was the last one? It was pretty bad. I got off topic quite a bit. But things are going well. It's great. I just wanted to give a good progress report. I've been working on the morning prayer slash meditation. It's a great way to start the day. I'm each day like more and more having more and more self-realizations about myself. And it's good. I feel like the more you know about yourself, the more you can accomplish. I feel like we ignore too much about how we think, and sometimes we think the way we think is bad. But it's not, We all think differently. We think in different ways, and we have to figure out how we can best use that. And sometimes we need the help of a therapist or a support group or medication to do that. Not everybody. Nah. But there's a select group of us who do need that. But I think we all need a good support group. But yeah, a big self-realization I had, and it has to do with writing. I'm glad I realized it. Was I go long? There's times I go a long amount of time without writing, and I would always guilt myself about it. But I realize I do this because I need to know exactly what I'm writing ahead of time before I can sit down and write it. I have a hard time just free-form writing. sitting at the computer, I need to have the story plotted out, the character developed, what each chapter is going to contain. So I'll brainstorm for months, and then actually writing the book doesn't take that long. But I brainstorm for a long time because I want the story to just be perfect. And then when I write, I can just focus on the style. and so I can't really begin to write until I have it. I'll freeze. And I'm like, does that, and I think maybe I have difficulty like with that idea of learning on the job. Some people can, some people can't. Me, when I'm given a task, if I don't already know how to do it, if I don't already right away know what it is I need to exactly do and that I know I'm capable of doing it, I freeze up. I start obsessing over whether I'm going to do it right or not, and then I like kind of become incapable of doing it. And so I'm going to kind of look into that and see what kind of mental exercise, what I can do to help with that. Not so much maybe, I don't want to give myself unrealistic expectations and say I'm going to figure out how to do that. No, but how to cope with it, how to not obsess or freak out, how to take it in stride and realize it's okay, you know, if one way of learning is making mistakes and then going from there and realizing that's okay, you know. And I think it's because I feel like I had to get it perfect that first time around. And that's very unrealistic. So realizing I've got unrealistic expectations, I have difficulty just learning something in that moment because I expect myself to be perfect at that new thing in the moment. But that's the self-realization I had, and I'm glad I had it because now I can move forward, and especially with this new job I'm going to be taking on November 2nd, I feel like it'll go well. I do. So, yeah, I gotta say, I'm over 100 days without smoking a cigarette. Yay! Feeling good about that. Over 100 days without looking at pornography. Awesome. Feeling good about that. Now, some of you who listen may be like, oh, well, yeah, smoking's bad, but nothing wrong with pornography. You know, that's not my job to judge. Like, I know for me, I feel convicted that it's not good for me, you know. I'm a very visual person. Digital media is, I can get easily drawn in and addicted. I can't unsee anything I've ever seen. I remember TV shows from 30 years ago, an episode I saw once, you know, I remember the visualization, so you can imagine what I remember of any naked pictures I saw when I first saw them. I can remember all the first ones I ever saw when I was like 12 years old or younger. So it's like, for my mental health, not just for me, it's more than mental. For others, it might not be, but for me, it's mental and spiritual health. I stay away from it. And I feel like, there's good reasons for me to stay away from it. And so I feel so great, you know, going this over 100 days without that. I feel great going over the 100 days without cigarettes. honestly, at the time, I didn't think I could quit, you know, go this long. But of course, when you're in the middle of an addiction like that, especially one you obsess over like I did, you don't think you can quit. It's not until you take that first step. It's not then. And it could be other things. You may think you can never stop thinking depressive thoughts or obsessive thoughts, or, you know, you can never have peace in your mind again. Because in that moment, our mind lies to us. Like, we lie to ourselves. I think this is going to be it. When it's not, you know, we can get help. We can meet new people. We can get on some good meds. All these things, you know, we can see a therapist, we get help, we can join a support group, we can remove ourselves from a bad situation. It takes time, though, you know, and not everything's done in a moment. Things take time, and you know, sometimes we forget how much time we have on this earth, you know. Yeah, it's a big saying, like, oh, you know, our time on this earth is just a blink. But, you know, like, if I'm thinking, like, right now in this moment, like 10 years from now, I have no idea what's going to be going on. 10 years seems like a long way away, you know. So sometimes it does feel like we're here a long time. You know, so take that into consideration. You know, just remember, you know, the way you're feeling now doesn't, especially if it's negative, it doesn't always have to be that way. There are ways to get around it. You know, sometimes we lie to ourselves and say no, but that's not true. but yeah, feeling good, no porn, no cigarettes, but also doing positive things, you know, teaching myself things. Yeah, just trying to enjoy this life we've been given, you know, just really enjoy it, embrace it. However, I added a new addiction. I just, it's something I do, but I've gotten back into drinking coffee. Yeah, I forgot how good coffee was, but I get the Frappuccinos. There's this place called Early Russian Muskogee that makes like the best frappuccinos. And I've been going and getting one a day. They're like medium's like $4.50 and large is $6. And so I've just been nonstop getting one a day. But like I don't want you to think I've just started drinking coffee. No, I used to drink coffee back in the day. Back in college, I'd smoke and drink coffee, and like I've mentioned, I do things in extremes. And when my friends and I would go out to a there's this old dive, like hole in the wall restaurant, local 24-hour place. We go study there, and so from like midnight to 3 or 4 in the morning, I'd go through like 8 or so cups of coffee, like 10 to 12 cigarettes. So when I get back to my dorm room, my heart would be racing, and I would not be able to fall asleep. You'd think I was on speed or something. And so after a long time of doing this, it's no surprise that one time my heart started skipping beats. I freaked out. I went to the hospital, and the lady was like, "Your heart's just beating really fast," and they kept asking me if I was on cocaine. I'm not lying. The lady goes, "Do you do cocaine?" I go, "No." She asked me like 5 times because she didn't believe me. That's how extreme I take things. Like, that's how much coffee I was drinking and how much cigarettes I was smoking. So I quit caffeine and I quit smoking then. This was 11 years ago. And a few months later, when my heart was beating normal again, I went back to smoking. But I kept away from caffeine. I was like, well, as long as I'm not doing both, I'll be all right. And I stayed away from caffeine like for a long time. I think in that like 11-year span, I had like one cup of coffee and like two Pepsis. So like, and I was like, well, if I can't have caffeine, I just won't drink pop ever again. I really rarely drink pop now. But since I quit smoking, I was like, oh, I can do coffee again. And but I'm not going to the extremes like I used to. I'll have one a day. But I need to kind of cut back on that because of how expensive it is. And my wife has been daily saying, like, quit getting those expensive coffees every day. It's like, all right, all right. And it's Thursday. I drove, it was before my wife got off work. I went to Early Rush, got a coffee, paid with my debit card, and I forgot, like right after I bought it, I put the straw to my lips, about to take a drink. I get a text on my phone, and I stop before completely pulling out and driving. And I look at the text, and it's from my wife. It says, "Really? $6?" I start driving. I'm thinking, wait, how does she know I just bought a coffee? And I get home, I read the rest of it, and she said, "You realize I get they text me the receipt." I had forgotten a while back she used that card, debit card at Early Rush, and just I guess put in her phone number to receive receipts through text message. So I was like busted. So I went and bought some stuff to make my own cappuccinos. So it's a lot cheaper. And oh, this one I bought today, it's like for iced coffee, but I'm gonna see about blending it up because it tastes really good. It tastes almost just like it. It's like in this milk carton and it's cold and it's like this mocha. But I got one that's a bit healthy. It's like a third less fat. It's got cane sugar in it instead of high fructose corn syrup. And like another reason, I don't want to gloss over it, but another reason I need to quit getting these coffees every day is like when I had my blood test done, my triglyceride levels were really high, like in the 400s, and my cholesterol is a bit high, so I gotta bring all that down. Because I don't want to be obsessing about if I'm gonna have a heart attack at some point. So, but I think that's all for the week. That's the progress report. Oh, it looks like maybe I'll only be like 15 minutes less than the recording from that I did on Thursday. But that's all right. I didn't read the poem or spend like 5 minutes explaining why I read the poem. Maybe I'll do it next week. Maybe I have piqued your interest and have you want me to recite the first 4 lines or first 5 lines of this poem by Alfred Lord Tennyson. But yeah, it's Saturday. No, now it's Sunday morning. So I'm going to sign off. Hope every one of you have a good evening, have a good week. Remember, think positively. Do what you can to find a support group. If you don't see a therapist but you feel like you should, if someone, anyone's ever told you that they think you're depressed, that you might be bipolar, that you have ADD, that they think you're OCD, don't just think they're saying this. Don't think they're being critical. Don't think they're just looking for flaws, because maybe it's true. Maybe you do need to see a therapist. Maybe you've always like been confused by how your thoughts work, or been confused by, you know, why you can't stop doing certain things. You know, go see a therapist. Talk to somebody. There's professionals out there. Remember, I'm not a professional. A lot of us aren't professionals. There's so many things about the brain we don't know. And just because we've been told something our whole life from a parent, or because we just assume, you know, like something about mental health, doesn't mean those are real facts. You know, there are people out there who are liars. There are people out there who are manipulators. And it's good to be able to learn how to tell the difference between liars and manipulators and those who are trustworthy and truthful. I hope the best for everybody, and I will talk with you next week.